Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the sound. It's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, a couple of organizations that have been great resources for our program over the years, the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection and the Connecticut Better Business Bureau, have just wrapped up a very busy National Consumer Protection Week. But representatives from both those agencies wanted to be sure consumers across the state could be better protected and educated. So we're going to welcome State Consumer Protection Commissioner Michelle Siegel to open the program. And we're going to close with Howard Schwartz, our longtime contact and correspondent at the Connecticut Better Business Bureau. In between, we'll have a stimulating conversation with Connecticut author C.J. Golden, whose new book provides tips and reinforcement to anyone who's ever been or who will ever be a caregiver. She draws lessons from a long and spirited life, as well as her most recent journey, assisting her husband back to health after a number of cancer-inducing strokes nearly cost this vibrant cross-country cyclist his life. So don't go away. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. The Journalism Education Foundation of New England, the division of the New England Newspaper and Press Association, or NEMPA, will award up to 10 $1,000 scholarships this spring to high school seniors and college students who aspire to pursue a career in journalism. The scholarship is available to residents of all New England states, and applicants must be a college student or high school senior planning to attend college the following year to study journalism or a related field, and they're required to have a GPA of 3.0 or above. If you're interested, you can download the scholarship application by visiting NENPA.com. Well, as we said in the introduction, we are here at the tail end of National Consumer Protection Week, and we're so pleased to start the first of two segments we're going to have this morning with the Commissioner of Connecticut's Department of Consumer Protection. You've already heard her at least once here on the program since she's joined the department. Michelle Siegel's on the line. Michelle, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be back.
So tell us just for a moment, what are the kinds of things that you've been doing during this week that celebrates you and your agency and all the incredible folks that work with you? How are you celebrating Consumer Protection Week?
Well, thank you. It's a really important week, and one of the things we find is the best thing we can do to protect consumers is to help give them the information they need to protect themselves. And so we're excited this week. We're teaming up with the Better Business Bureau to really get a lot of information out to consumers every single day. And what we're doing is we've picked a different theme for each day to educate consumers on. So today our topic is social media schemes. And what we're really trying to do is educate people so they don't fall victim to things like clickbait, which is where you maybe receive an email or a pop-up message and are encouraged to click on a link. And then it turns out that's actually taking you to a place where perhaps there's malware or other problems. So that's one of the big things we're doing. Some of our other themes are home improvement, safe giving, so to help people with donating to charities, how to use credit checking services. We're doing a day dedicated to military consumer protection issues, and then scams targeting immigrant communities and also retail warnings.
Great. Well, in terms of celebrating both you and your team at the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection, we want to educate our listeners a little bit about exactly what your organization does, or at least a few of the myriad things that they get involved with. The first and foremost being what we're doing right now, outreach and education. It's not just your appearances in the media or in op-eds and articles that educate the community. You have many, many people at the agency and various departments that do this many times every day.
We do. So we regulate a large section of the marketplace, and it's really important for us. And best thing for consumers is when you can have a market that's working well, where everybody is acting responsibly. Some of the different areas we regulate is we're responsible for drug control in the state. We regulate the pharmacies and pharmacists. In addition, we house the medical marijuana program. We're also responsible for liquor control in the state, for legal gaming, which is lottery, the off-track betting facility, the casinos. In addition, we do some work around product safety. In particular, we want to make sure consumers are aware when there's been a recall of a product, and we go out and try to make sure those products are not on the shelves. Some other things we regulate are food, and then also we regulate weights and measures in the state. So that's just a few of the many areas we're regulating. We also do a lot of licensing, so there are a range of businesses from home improvement contractors, accountants, electricians, architects who get licenses from us. So that's another important part of what we do. But for Consumer Protection Week, and a really good thing for consumers, is our outreach and education and really being out there. And with so much going on in the marketplace, making sure consumers have the information they need when they need it to protect themselves.
They should also know that your agency is a conduit to a number of other regional, nonprofit, and federal agencies that also look out for consumers.
There are. So we partner closely, and we like to get information out to consumers, for example, from the Federal Trade Commission. They have a lot of good information, as well as we are this week. We're partnering with the Better Business Bureau on getting information to consumers. And throughout the year, we're heavily engaged in working with a variety of partners. We work with the AARP to do fraud watch type seminars for seniors in Connecticut. And then a really important thing we're doing is we're trying to reach out to some of the underserved communities, ones who may not always go to traditional media for their information. And so we do a monthly column in Tribuna, which is an English, Spanish, and Portuguese paper. We also do a column regularly in White Eagle, a Polish newspaper. We're on Radio Cumbre, which is a Spanish radio station in Bridgeport. So we're really trying through all different avenues to reach consumers, and then we're very active on social media as well, so that every single day consumers, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter, can get tips on how to protect themselves.
Great. Well, one of the more interesting aspects of the Department of Consumer Protection here in Connecticut is work that you do either availing individuals of particular types of medications that they may need to help them heal or make their lives more comfortable, as well as going after issues related to drugs that are causing problems and deaths in our communities here in Connecticut. So with that in mind, let's open up talking about this sort of dual mission you have in both kind of overseeing Connecticut's world of medical marijuana, as well as the fact that you're promoting drug drop boxes and drug disposals to help put the kibosh on this incredible and horrific opioid epidemic we're facing right here in the state.
Thank you. Yeah, those are both really important topics, and they're actually connected in a lot of ways, as a number of patients are actually finding that they have less of a need to use opioids when they move to medical marijuana, and that they're finding that's actually a product that's helping relieve pain in a way that can reduce their need for painkillers. But we've been really proud of our medical marijuana program. It's currently helping almost 25,000 patients in the state with a variety of conditions. There's 22 conditions currently that are available for patients, for adult patients, and 6 for patients under the age of 18. And so there's a lot of things going on in the program right now, and we're really excited for how it's helping so many patients. So we are looking now to expand the number of dispensary facilities that are available to serve patients. We're in a couple years ago, legislation passed to facilitate research in the state, which is something we're also very excited about. So far that program's been a really good success, and it's continuing to grow, and we're seeing both more patients benefiting from the program, and we're seeing an increase in doctors, over 800 now, who are out there certifying patients for this program. But the other thing, and sort of the flip side to medication, is sometimes it does have some negative effects in our communities, which is what we're seeing with some of some other products, and particularly the opioid epidemic, which is really a big issue in that we are trying to do our part. It's very complicated, and there's no one solution to it. But one of the things we're doing, as you mentioned, is we have been working to put out drug disposal drop boxes, working with local police to get these out in the communities. Right now, there's over 75 of them throughout the state, and you can visit our website to find one in a community near you. Just for your listeners, that's at ct.gov/dropbox. But just to give you an idea of how successful this program has been, when we first started making these drop boxes available in 2012, just over 3,600 pounds of medications were burned. For 2017, it was over 37,000.
Wow.
So So, yeah, it's been a really great steady increase. So that's 37,000, more than that, 37,541 pounds of pharmaceutical products that are being disposed of, and we're getting out of the stream of commerce and away from people who may be susceptible to abuse.
Excellent. Folks, if you're with us, we are here at the tail end of National Consumer Protection Week, opening up the program with one of two folks that will be speaking to the issue of consumer protection. Our Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection Commissioner, Michelle Siegel, is with us on the line for another few minutes. So another thing that seems to be proliferating, and that I personally, as listeners probably know, due to my proximity to the tragedy at Sandy Hook, watched play out in real time. And that was both when a crisis hits, charities oftentimes rush to help or establish funds to collect money to help, while at the same time, unscrupulous characters around the world who are taking note of these disasters through the media are rushing to set up phony charities to scam people out of money who think they're doing good on behalf of the victims of these disasters. Talk a little bit in the last few moments that we have with you about the work that your department does in terms of charities.
So you're correct to point out, and unfortunately with so many things going on, and whether it's natural disasters or other tragedies, there's in a good way an instinct from people that you want to reach out, you want to help, you want to provide money, and unfortunately there are unscrupulous people who take advantage of kind of people's, for the most part, good intentions, and will set up fraudulent charities. So it's really important to us. One, we want consumers to have their money going where they want it to go. And also, we want the legitimate charities to be the beneficiary of these funds so that they are actually out there helping people. So we have, and you can find on our website a lot of information on that, but we're really trying to inform the public about how to avoid these scams. And one thing important is just, it's always good as you're doing budgeting for the year to think through how much you want to give to charities and identify some that you want to give to, but often as events unfold, others may pop up and you may want to change your donations. So we always encourage people, whenever you get a call out of the blue or somebody is soliciting money from you, don't ever feel compelled to give money right away over the phone. Don't give personal information over the phone or to somebody. Always take your time, do some research. There's a lot of great websites out there like Charity Navigator or GuideStar that will help you research a charity and understand how they're spending their money. You can also visit our website at elicense.ct.gov to see if a charity that's soliciting here is registered with us, because they should be. So those are just a number of different things that people can do. But, the big thing is just always make sure you understand who's the charity you're donating to, and that your money is going to that place. Sometimes people will call up claiming to be from a well-known charity, but they've actually changed the name slightly or in some other way to trick people.
Yeah.
So, it's unfortunate. And we have a lot of tips up. We have a smart consumer website, another thing we've been doing getting out there for consumers. It's smartconsumer.ct.gov, and it has a lot of tips. Our website, because we do so much, it's often always hard to find some of the information you need if you want some consumer tips. So we have a separate website just out there focused on consumers with really helpful information, including how to identify and avoid charity scams.
Excellent. The other awesome thing about you, Commissioner Siegel, and your designees at the Department of Consumer Protection is that you and they make themselves available to our program several times during the year when we want to bounce in and talk about things that are hot buttons happening in the media or trends that seem to be developing, seasonal related issues. And so we sort of make every week Consumer Protection Week here on the award-winning For the People, as you do at the Department of Consumer Protection. So I'm sure we'll be talking to you or one of your many department representatives at some point in the near future as things pop up that are of interest or concern to consumers throughout the state of Connecticut. So as we say farewell to Consumer Protection Week, we thank you and everyone at the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection for the great work that you're doing, and we will talk to you again soon.
All right. Well, March, if you did know it or not, is Women's Empowerment Month. So we're going to spend a few minutes with Connecticut author C.J. Karen Golden. Her third book is called One Petal at a Time, A Novice Caregiver and Her Cyclist Husband Face Their New Normal with Courage, Tenacity, and Abundant Love. And it follows in real time a year-long journey of a long-distance cyclist during and after his cancer-induced strokes. That is C.J.'s husband, Joe. And, you know, occasionally on our program, we like to feature folks that have a wealth of life's experience that can bring good information to all you folks listening out there. So, CJ, thanks for being part of the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
So let's start sort of near the beginning. Your caregiving life actually began with your transition from college into your first career as a speech and hearing therapist. Do you think that's when you first started getting the idea that you wanted to kind of serve other people and help make their lives better?
I suspect so. As you're saying that, you're right. I don't know that I knew it at the time, but I know that I had an awfully hard time collecting fees that were due to me because all I wanted to do was help these kids I was working with. Mm. And the business part of it just wasn't interesting or important.
And you did it with within school systems as well. So you were sort of part of the very first wave of what we now know as kind of special education, right?
Sure. Well, now everybody knows how old I am. The school systems were just being mandated to have within their buildings and within their setting special ed. Mm-hmm. And that would have been me with the speech therapy.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your recollection of doing that, not only as an sort of in the education arena, but then kind of hanging out your own shingle and doing it as an independent operator or like an owner operator.
Yeah, I enjoyed doing that. I was New England Regional Diagnostic Center, mm-hmm. NERDIC, and had a friend, a colleague with me who is a reading specialist. And it gave me the opportunity to work with adults as well as the kids. The kids are fun. They're great. Yeah. But working with the adults on the language problems, the difficulties after a stroke, perhaps, that really gave me a more full and more extensive picture with which to work.
Mm-hmm. And you also enjoyed a little bit of a career as a, first as an actor and then as sort of behind the scenes a box office and marketing sales rep at the now defunct and demolished Candlewood Playhouse up in New Fairfield.
I did. A very small career as an actor, but it was fun. It was in my system. I had to get out of my system and who knows? You know, I'm waiting for Betty White to retire, and they'll be looking for the next Betty White, and maybe somebody will find me.
And but you were you had some reoccurring roles in some pretty famous soap operas and a notable film which got a few Oscar nominations.
Yes, yeah, it was fun. My final pièce de la résistance was working with. In the film Chaplin, and that was it. I said, okay, it's not going to get better than this. I'm out of here. It wasn't the lifestyle that I wanted. I love the performing. I don't like the business end of show business.
Mm-hmm. So a huge change in your life happened during what is usually regarded by a lot of folks as a really, really happy time. And while it was really, really happy news, it impacted you differently when you learned you were going to be a grandmother.
Oh, yes. Our poor daughter, she called us and said, guess what? I'm pregnant. And I handed the phone to my husband, to Joe, and I crawled under the covers with a whopping headache. I did not want to be a grandmother. That was proof that I was now officially old.
Mm-hmm. And so you hearkened back to a sort of a general religious studies class and grappled onto a piece of it that has since served you not only to help you reorient and head out in a very positive new life's direction, but also provided some impetus and inspiration for your first two books.
It did. I came to the realization with the help of a friend who is a social worker that I was either going to spend my life with a headache under the covers, or I was going to do something about it. And this friend, Kathy, said to me, well, here's the deal. Why don't you go out and talk to women, see if they're having trouble with the aging process and the transitions that come along with it. See what their problems are. See how you can help. See what you share in common. And if you come upon women who don't have any problems, those are the ones you latch onto. You learn how they're not having problems. And in that, and quite honestly, in trying to come up with a working title for the book, I came up with the Tao of Aging, because Taoism is acceptance. My agent at the time, my book agent, said, you can't use the word aging. You can't. Now you can. But back then, you couldn't. So it became Tao of the Defiant Woman, defying negativity, defying self-defeating behaviors, defying self-limitations, defying harmful stereotypes. That's all the stuff that went into my dislike, disapproval of the aging process. And those are all the things I learned to defy.
Mm-hmm. And are those the principle of Taoism?
Yeah, the principle of Taoism truly is we are all here together. We are all part of this earth. We are all one into the other and with the other. We are interconnected. We go through transitions. Life takes turns. We can't stop those turns from happening. But what we can do is take our unique abilities, accept, which means not roll over and play dead if you see a car coming at you and you're in the middle of the road. It means acknowledge. Acknowledge that this has happened, that this is the transition, and now do something about it. Do something positive about it. That's Taoism.
Excellent. Folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with author C.J. Golden. She lives here in Connecticut and is just in the process of releasing her third book, which is called One Petal at a Time, A Novice Caregiver and Her Cyclist Husband Face Their New Normal with Courage, Tenacity, and Abundant Love. March is Women's Empowerment Month, so we are going to be seeking out a couple of guests over the course of the rest of the month who are speaking to women's empowerment and talking a little bit about some of the ways that they have been able to negotiate their lives and passing that advice on, hopefully, to folks who could benefit from it. So we talked a little bit about your first book, CJ, The Tao of the Defiant Woman. And as a result of that, a bunch of defiant women came looking for some guidance for their defiant daughters.
Yes, and defiant. Well, okay, I wanted to call that book, I wanted to title that book, The Tao of the Defiant Teen, but in that case, people might think of it as petulance rather than a positive defiance. Mm-hmm. And I did. I wrote Tao Girls Rule, had to come up with that title, Tao Girls Rule, and it was targeted at girls from 11 to 14, but it seems to be going over very well with high schoolers, and I'm taking that Taoist attitude and bringing them to workshops in various high schools and girls' groups around the country, mostly around the state.
Yeah. So how was the research and process of producing a book that you initially targeted for adolescent girls different than the work that you did with adult women? And did you have a template in place when you were doing the first book for adult women that served you at all as you moved into writing for that much younger demographic?
Well, the template was the Tao and the principles of Taoism that I share and the defiant end of it. With women, as I was researching the women's book, I held big workshops, gathered groups together, had little tete-a-tetes. With the girls, I reached out to them as well. I reached out to Girl Scouts actually around the country and traveled around the country meeting with these groups of kids, what I found out is that what they are going through now isn't very much different than what I went through when I was a teen, except for the outreach of, if you're bullied now, of course, we all know it goes out to the internet. The world knows it.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was a kid, it went as far as the walls of the school.
Great. We're going to take a quick break and come back and finish our chat with author C.J. Golden. If you're interested in learning more about her, her website is cjgolden.com.
That's it.
Easy to go to, cjgolden.com, and you could find out perhaps about appearances that she'll be making or workshops she's organizing, certainly book signing opportunities as this new third book rolls out. We'll come back and talk a lot more about that and some of the great advice that she has stitched into that publication. Stay with us.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. Love CT also has funds to donate to a local charity. If you're part of or know of an organization in Connecticut and would like to be a beneficiary of the Love CT Fund grant, submit your request at lovect.org. Look for Love CT all over Connecticut and get involved. Love CT is powered by Allied Building Products, Planet Fitness, and Chip's Family Restaurant. Learn more at lovect.org. I'm Director of Public Affairs John Boquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. As you heard, it's Consumer Protection Month, but March is also Red Cross Month, and the American Red Cross of Connecticut is asking people across the state to become a hero by giving blood, becoming a volunteer, or making a donation to help families on Giving Day, March 28th. This year, the Red Cross salutes all the heroes who make a difference in their communities by donating blood or platelets, volunteering to help people impacted by a disaster, taking a first aid or CPR class to help in an emergency, and providing comfort to a member of the military, a veteran, or their family. So during March, be a hero and join the humanitarian mission of the Red Cross. And for more information on how you can help, go to redcross.org/CT.
Thanks for sticking with us. We're back with Connecticut author C.J. Golden. March is Women's Empowerment Month, and in line with that, C.J. has just released her third book, a very personal account called One Petal at a Time, a novice caregiver and her cyclist husband face their new normal with courage, tenacity, and abundant love. As we mentioned earlier in the segment, this book follows in real time a year-long journey of a long-distance cyclist during and after his cancer-induced strokes. The him in that equation is Joe Golden, CJ's husband. So CJ, quickly, tell us just a little bit about the diagnosis and the onset and how you were able to best approach your caregiving responsibilities while being grounded in these Taoist principles and other practicalities that you've are so deeply seated in your personality.
Well, I need to let you know that I wasn't always grounded. Mm. Taoism helped me, and I only recognized that after the fact. At the very first of the diagnosis, the very beginning, when Joe was diagnosed with CLL, chronic lymphocytic leukemia, we were told it's not a big deal, it's nothing to worry about, and we kind of put it on the back burner, didn't even tell the kids. Now, fast forward 2 years, and Joe's speech became a little wonky. Uh-huh. You might remember, folks, that I said I was a speech therapist at one point. I didn't notice that his speech was off. Hmm. He did. I had a feeling something was going on, and I'm, as you can't see me, but as I'm saying this, my face is looking as confused as my head had felt. I was either ignoring, or I was just blithely unaware, or I didn't want to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And that part bugs me. It really annoys me that I was not right on top of it from the get-go. Oh. But as soon as we knew that this was stroke, it took a while to find out that the strokes, plural, were most likely caused by the CLL, the white cells glomming up together. Yeah. Very unusual, but leave it to Joe. He's unusual.
Yeah.
I knew I had a lot to learn. I think we all understand somewhat about caregiving. Certainly I did because of my elderly parents, but nothing like this. And there were a lot of lessons to learn, and as I moved through, I kept adding to my responsibilities, and I kept adding to those things that I was, the information I was gleaning, and adding to understanding who I could go to for help and how I could go to various people for help.
So up until that point, Joe was pretty active. He was an avid cyclist. To the extent of long distance cycling at that point?
Yeah. when he turned 60, he looked at me and said, "I'm going to ride my bicycle across the country." What? He had gone around the block.
Yeah.
My God, he did it. He did it. He went from Virginia, from Yorktown, Virginia, up to Oregon. Mm-hmm. And that was the first, and he learned a lot. The second trip was, I think he did the from Mexico to Canada along the Sierra Cascade, along the ridgeline.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. And the last trip was just a year before his strokes, before this all hit. And it took him from San Diego to St. Augustine, Florida. And I had asked him, "How do you do this?" Particularly Texas, which was so inhospitable and big. And he looked at me and he said, "Well, I do it one pedal at a time." Ergo, this is how we got through his strokes, one pedal at a time. And actually, I was referring to his time in the hospitals as Texas.
And the good news is, not to sneak the ending in before the end of the conversation, but now he has come through these darker days to an extent that he's planning yet another cross-country cycling excursion.
He really is. Well, we just gave him – that's a spoiler alert, folks. he now is training on a recumbent three-wheel bike. He can indeed ride his road bike. He's a little shaky. He's not quite comfortable. It's a little difficult to get onto. It's a little difficult to get off of. That's important.
Yes.
And he will be riding in September to November, the length of Route 66 from Chicago to Santa Monica. I came home yesterday and saw a brand new sleeping bag waiting for him on the kitchen table.
That's great. Well, a couple of the things we wanted to key in, picking up on something you said just a few moments ago, were some key individuals who participated in this recovery process for good or ill. Let's start with the medical support staff. Part of what you write about is and can convey is the relationship that you were able to strike with many members of his medical team, that in the end you've been able to look back and see that kind of the way you handled your relations with his medical support staff made what you believe is a huge and positive difference in the way he was able to navigate recovery.
Absolutely. How do I say this? I was just being me. And for whatever reason, the me that I was being was accepted and as part of the medical team. I intuited to whom I could go for help. I intuited who I could shadow. I intuited which doctors are wonderful technicians and great at their jobs, but they didn't have time for me to be asking questions. I learned how to work with those on the medical staff with whom I didn't agree. I heard too many people up and down the hallways yelling and screaming and shouting at doctors. And that's never the way to deal with anyone, right? there was one doctor in particular who I totally disagreed with. And we spoke, and the next day we spoke again and recognized that we both wanted the best for Joe. We just had different ways to get there. Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing you have to learn when you're dealing with somebody that you love and this person is in the hospital, rather than being totally confused and totally not understanding. Mm. One needs to know what's going on. That doesn't mean that I had to take a course in brain surgery 101 before his brain biopsy. Mm-hmm. But it did mean that I was able to approach the doctor, the surgeon, and find out what was going on, how, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. You also, there's, you know, kind of a saying that sometimes when one gets sick, you really find out who your friends are. Your kind of unique approach to the dynamics of friendships when dealing with a dire illness is interesting in that those who gravitated toward you became closer and better friends, but those good friends that you had that for whatever reason gravitated away from your relationship and your situation, you didn't really hold that against them.
I did at first, and then better common sense kicked in. People will do only as much as they can do. There are those who are afraid to say something because they don't know what to say and they don't want to sound dumb. Ergo, we must be open to those who say something that we intuit or we interpret as silly. Mm. They're doing the best they can, folks. There are those who run away and don't approach you because they don't know what to do at the beginning, and then time has elapsed and they don't know what to do because it's been too long and they think they can't say anything anymore. Those are the people that I had to cut them slack. In some cases, it was very painful. In some cases, they were very close and even family members. Can't hold on to grudges and can't hold on to anger. There's too much else going on in the world that's important.
Yeah. In closing, the end of the book features a list of available physical, emotional, and financial resources that you hope would help folks who may find themselves in the situation that you and Joe are in. Can you just let folks know how they can go about getting a copy of your new book?
Ah, I thought you were going to ask me to list those physical and emotional financial reasons. And my mind is whirling. Yes, the book is available as everything, right, on Amazon.com. Okay. It's available on BarnesandNoble.com. At this point, it should be available, if not on the shelves, at any brick-and-mortar store. The major distributor, Ingram, who distributes to these stores, is just getting it now. It's so new. Mm-hmm. But if you go to if you're adverse to an online store and you'd rather go to brick and mortar, go to a brick and mortar store, and they should be able to get it at this point.
And they can always start at your website.
Oh, absolutely, cjgolden.com. I'll even send an autographed copy.
Excellent. Thank you for being part of our broadcast here during March, which is Women's Empowerment Month. Connecticut author C.J. Golden's third book, One Petal at a Time, A Novice Caregiver and Her Cyclist Husband Face Their New Normal with Courage, Tenacity, and Abundant Love, is available for any and all who are seeking either some ideas about getting through what may become an eventual medical emergency or situation with somebody that they love. It's a great and quick read. We hope you'll check it out. CJ, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you for letting me share my story.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap up touching base with a long and dear friend to the award-winning For the People here as we look back on Consumer Protection Week in Connecticut. And we do want to thank once again Commissioner Siegel from the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection for kicking off the program. But we couldn't fully relish the consumer protection experience without the steady voice of our long and dear friend Howard Schwartz, Executive Communications Director from Connecticut BBB, who is with us here to take a bow as we wrap up our program this morning. Howard, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure, John.
And so we've got four pretty important subjects we're going to buzz through over the next 14 or 15 minutes. And the first one is something that is on more and more people's minds lately, and that is lowering your monthly fixed cost and trying to somehow scrape some money together to save each month. So let's start out with somewhat of a broad subject that you'll, of course, narrow down with some really pertinent points. Let us know how we can begin the journey toward savings and lowering our monthly fixed costs.
Sure. Normally we think about saving money on the internet, but as you say, we're talking about home now. And there is a lot of wiggle room, actually, to lower those fixed costs. Let's start out with insurance. One of the things we should be looking at every 2 years, at least, is to see what we're paying for our insurance and shop around. It is a very competitive field, and you will find that you can get the same coverage for less money with another insurance company. And another way to save money on insurance, because it can be so expensive for the car, for the home, for liability, is to look at your deductible. Now, for example, if you are willing to pay the first $500 out of pocket, that helps. But if you're willing to pay the first $1,000, $2,000, or $3,000 out of pocket, that will significantly lower your monthly insurance payments. And that's a good way to start. Doesn't cost you anything. Another good area for saving money is on utility bills. And if you're looking to replace something within the next couple of weeks or months, keep in mind that the appliances today are more energy efficient and will lower your electricity bills. And as well in that same area, there are what are called smart thermostats. And these can reduce your electricity consumption by learning your habits, and it will put itself into night mode or away mode from home and automatically lower your air conditioning and heating. Now, one of the things, John, that people think about is a way to save money on a long-term basis is you go to the cash register with $100 worth of merchandise, and they'll say, well, you can take 20% off that if you sign up for a store card today, and it'll be a retailer-specific card. There's nothing wrong with that. They'll give you interest-free for a year, a certain amount. The catch is, if you miss a payment or you're late, you're going to be hit with very high interest rates, and in some cases have to pay all of the interest for the period since you got that card. And the other thing to keep in mind is that having another card might lower some people's credit scores. We can look for alternatives for the expensive monthly services such as cable or satellite and wireless providers. And when you ask about discounts or alternative plans, make sure that it's not contingent on signing up for other services. And things, again, like cable and satellite, there's some folks have cut the cord and turned to things like monthly payments for one of the more modest streaming services.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. And finally, perform seasonal preventative maintenance on the home, things like air filters, water filters, and having your furnace and chimney cleaned and inspected. Because our homes, they're very much like vehicles in the sense that you save money over the long term if your car is tuned up. And so it is with our homes. And this one's interesting. Avoid buying just because something's on sale. We should buy what we need when we need it. And the best way to determine that is by asking ourselves whether we would still buy it if it was not discounted.
Hmm. You make a couple interesting points. One being that we'll give you a $25 gift card if you sign up for instant credit at the register at a department store, or we'll give you a 25% off or even more off of this order right here in front of us because it exceeds $100, and all you got to do is sign up for our card. And as you said, if you miss a payment, payment, or if you're late, or if there's some issue, you could end up not only repaying that entire 25%, but then some. And on the subject of taking better care of one's home, we can't forget that here in Connecticut, the energy companies offer or are working with an organization that'll come in and do an energy audit. So it'll even help a homeowner to be able to pinpoint more effectively where they might actually spend some money and make a huge investment in long-term savings. So very, very pertinent advice there. I also understand now that there's some concern on the BBB radar about organizations that are calling, representing themselves as technicians for Microsoft or Apple or other digital vendors that the consumer may actually be using on their home computers or on their mobile devices. And this is just a big tech imposter scam that could lead to even ransoming one's computer. Tell us about that.
That's correct. It is a tech scam imposter scheme. And as you mentioned, the major manufacturers will call you up and claim that there's a problem with your computer or that you're doing something illegal or that your computer is causing problems. And what they'll want to do is to send you a link so they can hop on and fix the problem remotely. Now, let's start off by saying there's no software manufacturer, there's no computer manufacturer. Who even knows whether our computers are in good shape or not. So if they call right away, you can hang up the phone because they're not who they say they are. Here's what the consequences are if by some chance you do allow them remote access. Better Business Bureau has had complaints from consumers saying that their computers actually slowed down after the work was done. And sometimes these so-called technicians will spend hour upon hour trying to fix a non-existent problem, and they will give you a significant bill to pay on top of it. And of course, there's no reason you should pay because there was no problem in the first place. But also of great concern is that these fellows can put a virus in your computer, the type of virus that might either send out spam from your computer, or a virus that can monitor you as you go around the internet and look at every login and every password you put in. So that's what viruses are like in 2018. So once again, if somebody calls you, says there's a problem, right away, that's a sign that you shouldn't be dealing with them. And that being said, if you do have a problem with your computer, bring it to a professional. If you don't have a friend who is, shall we say, a geek, and I mean that in the good sense.
Sure.
And I do know that the Federal Trade Commission has already taken action against a bunch of these schemes. And a side note for consumers who are looking for computer repairs, if you Google that, often there are companies that will put themselves all the way at the top of the Google list by using the word Microsoft or Apple. And when you actually take a closer look at their page, they might say affiliated with, or we carry Apple or Microsoft products. So don't jump for the very first one that you see there now that you're aware that companies might be out to deceive you into using their services.
Yeah, and very much a word to the wise. Google is an amazing movement and an amazing entity, but they like money too. And usually, I think the kind of rule of thumb is that anytime you put anything into a search on Google, chances are even as many as the top 6 to 8 hits that you get on that list before you start scrolling down are paying to be there and maybe even vying against each other to pay for higher placement on those search pages. So good information to know. As we move on, you know, as we tape this, we're kind of poised for another late winter storm here, but folks are already eyeballing various types of maintenance and home improvements for the spring and summer. And I know you have some wise words for folks in regards to the spring maintenance and renovations and things they need to be watchful for.
We do, John, and I don't know anybody who doesn't know a horror story about a kitchen job that began in January and still was not completed in June. And that's one of the sorts of problems you can have. We know that there are contractors who will take a deposit and disappear. or start work and let that project drag on, as you mentioned. And some of these problematic operators come from out of state. They may not be licensed or registered, insured, or even sufficiently competent to do the work properly. And we know that you can make up a number, put it on a truck or on a business card or a website, but that doesn't really mean anything. And if they show up at your front door and are soliciting business, Better Business Bureau recommends, thank you very much. They're not giving you the opportunity to do your research to find out if it's legitimate or not. And the other associated problems is that if you do have someone work on a job in your house and they ruin it, there might be professionals who you'll call in to fix it, and they don't want to touch a botched job because if there's something underlying that the scam contractor has done, they don't want to be held liable for any sorts of problems as a result of that. So one of the things you can do and should do is obtain multiple estimates before getting that contract. And rather than responding to a solicitation, find someone yourself instead of by the if someone calls you on the telephone. And by the way, when you get those in-house bids on a project, you'll learn a little something about how many hours it should take, the materials, those types of things. And then you make your choice out of them as you become more and more advanced in your knowledge of how this works. And when you're comparing bids, if there's one that's significantly lower than the others, you've got to ask yourself why. And if somebody offers you a sales pitch along the lines of, this is a today-only price, that's high-pressure sales. We need the time necessary to check them out, whether it's BBB.org. If we don't have them, and you mentioned Google before, very helpful is to put in the name of a company or a product and go onto a search engine, leave a space, and write the word problem or scam after it. And if it is a scam or there are problems, they will pop up left, right, and center. And when you have that contract, make sure that everything's in writing, verbal representations, as well as the number of hours, cost of materials, and very important, the start and completion dates. And make sure that the contractor pulls the necessary permits from City Hall. And if they're reluctant to do so, it might be because they've got a bad reputation in your town.
Right, and we can't forget that here in Connecticut, if you do hire a licensed contractor and something goes bad, we didn't really get to talk about this with Commissioner Siegel at Department of Consumer Protection earlier in the program, but Connecticut has a fund through which folks can recoup some losses in the event a licensed and registered contractor does shoddy work or a bad job. They can find out information about that just by going to ct.gov/DCP. Another important point is that you made that I dug into a little bit before we went on the air today, Howard, is the materials issue, because you can get three bids that seem to have almost the exact same wording and details, where one will be substantially less, and perhaps the reason is because that person is going for aftermarket or reused or other materials that may not be explicitly specified. So it's always good to ask the materials quality question, or even ask the contractor, I guess, if they could break down to the best ability specificity in the materials that they want to use, because that could be the thing that carries the day when it comes to an improvement project.
Without a doubt.
Yep. In closing, we've got about a minute or so left, so let's leave you and Consumer Protection Week with a word to the wise parent or caregiver. Spring is coming. A lot of kids are going to be graduating high school and getting ready for college. Kids are going to be going from middle school to high school. They're going to be asking about mom, dad, grandma, when could I get my own debit card? Tell us a little bit about when a good time is for a teenager or a college student, for that matter, to get a credit or debit card.
Well, the internet was really the big game changer. You require some form of payment, either debit or credit card or an online payment system. And that's one of the reasons they need them. But you've got to judge the maturity of your child, teenager, college student to make sure that they're capable of handling it. If it's a debit card and they overdraw their bank account, they'll be hit with fees. And it goes on their credit report and their credit score. And you've got to build up that credit. If it's a credit card, they can go way over and end up maxing out the card, and they're going to pay huge fees for that as well. So young people should understand that, and one of the first things they should do is visit annualcreditreport.com, annualcreditreport.com, because it's free and it's sanctioned by the government. And just to make sure that you don't have anything on your credit report that could bring down your score and hurt you.
Excellent. Wise advice. You can view expanded details on each of the items we talked about this morning and many, many, many others archived at bbb.org, right, Howard?
Yep.
bbb.org. And we want to thank our longtime cohort in consumer protection, Howard Schwartz from Connecticut BBB. He's executive communications director and a longtime guest on the award-winning For the People here as we wrap up and say farewell to Consumer Protection Week 2018. Howard, thank you again so much for being part of our For the People world here and helping all the folks that are listening to the extent that you do. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.